I'd like now to introduce our guest speaker of the month of March. And this evening, she will be speaking on steps 10, 11, and 12. And right now, I'd like to have Carrie C. from Harrison, New Jersey, come up.
Hi, I'm Carrie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carrie.
I just wanted to take a moment and congratulate the celebrants. Awesome. You know, and I also know what 8 years feels like. Just coming to the end of my own first 8 year. I'm kidding. 10, 11, and 12. Reliance and dependence. Like, if I did a word association when it comes to 10, 11, 12, it's reliance and dependence upon God, you know. And, you know, in doing the steps and in my spiritual path, I realized that I relied and depended on so many other things other than God. And I made so many people and so many institutions and so many fears my higher power that when I recognized that my life was based on a lie, and the lie was that people or outside things or external things could make me happy or feel, you know, kill my pain or, you know, enlighten me in the least, when I realized that that was all BS, you know, I had to depend on something that was greater than that. You know, in the doctor's opinion, it said that human things failed us, you know, and that our problems pile up and become astonishingly difficult to solve. You know, and Dr. Silkworth was entirely right, and he wasn't just talking about alcohol. What he was talking about is the spirit malady of the alcoholic, is that the human things that we use or I used in order to stifle the pain, to control, to avoid, to do everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. When they failed me, my problems piled up, and life became astonishingly difficult to solve. And when I'm thinking about 10, 11, and 12, you know, the ninth step, let me correct this, because I talked about this last week. I said that that prayer and meditation begins when you start to clean up the wreckage of your past. You know, the channels to God were not very clear in the fourth step, but I started to do the mechanics so that I could get used to them. I remember the first time I was introduced to something called the Oxford Group Meditation, and basically it's what's referred to in the big book. It's like where you sit quietly, ask for guidance and direction, and then you write it down. You know, and then you look at it, and the stuff that seems hinky is, and the stuff that doesn't, you're not sure about, talk to your sponsor, you know, and the stuff that seems like pretty spiritual, you know, like which is breathe, you know, love, those sorts of things you do. You know, so when I was first introduced to that, I remember being terrified because I was told, like, well, listen, if it doesn't work and you get nothing, then you're blocked off from God and you need to do more inventory. And I had just finished an inventory, or I was in the middle of inventory. I think I had done a resentment inventory and I was working on a fear inventory. So I'm like, oh no, I'm going to have to go back. There's something I missed. You know, and I won't have to do that because, like, inventory, you know, it's not always the funnest thing to do. So I remember being so scared that nothing would happen, that nothing happened. And, you know, and I've shared about my own weird relationship with God, you know, and my desire to have a barn-burning spiritual awakening in order to prove that I was good enough to have a barn-burning spiritual awakening. And I've always been kind of weird, you know. So when I approached 10, 11, and 12, I don't want to talk about mechanics again, and it's because you can read your own big book, and you should, and sponsorship is key. I mean, I couldn't be doing what I'm doing today if I wasn't sponsored. I don't go through the steps sitting in a meeting. I go through the steps at someone's kitchen table. In fact, my sponsor is going to be over my house tomorrow afternoon going through the steps with me. That, for me, is how the steps work, one-on-one. I learn a lot in meetings. I learn a lot in workshops. But you know what? I'm always sitting next to my sponsor or my spiritual advisor saying, hey, we got to do that, you know, that God comes to me on a personal level, you know. It's always been that way. So when I'm talking about 10, 11, and 12, it's such a difficult personal thing. it's very vulnerable. It was a lot easier talking about my four-step and the things that I've done because, trust me, people have seen it or heard about it. Kidding. You know, so it's a lot easier to talk about my character defects. It's a lot easier to talk about my fears and resentments and blah, 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 my lack of dependence upon God. But to actually talk about the nitty-gritty, what my relationship with God looks like without mechanics is difficult. And it's I'm at a loss for words. I really am. Like, I'm just thinking about this, and it's like, how the hell do you talk about that? You know, without hiding behind the book. You know, when I wake up in the morning, when I woke up this morning, the first thing I did is I was just conscious of the fact that I was awake. You know, my prayer meditation has changed much over the years. I actually had at one time, and it was until very recent, boasted to having not missed one day of meditation in 3 years. And my sponsor politely suggested that I not meditate for one day, just for the hell of it. Because if you're that anal retentive that you know how long it's been that you've been meditating, you need a break. You're a little too invested in it. It was really funny. So my prayer meditation has evolved over the years of working the steps. For a long time, I was afraid that if I didn't dot my I's and cross my T's when it came to prayer and meditation, that I would be without grace. And that's not my experience today. It's been my experience that God doesn't make hard terms with those who seek Him. You know, and I live a life that is centered around the fact that God has restored me to sanity. That God is living and working within me. That God is involved in my relationships the most. I'll let Him. That God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And how that manifests is different each day. You know, it used to be every day I'd wake up and I'd turn to pages 62. There's another thing that's when I'm messing with my will. I tend to read 60 and 62 in the morning. So it's either 60 and 62 and 84 to 86. Or basically that's what I would do in the morning. I would sit and I would open my book and I would read that, you know, until those pages fell out of my big book. They did. They're missing in every one of my big books because every morning I would wake up and do that. And after 3 years of doing that, like, I wasn't even looking at the book anymore, so I'm like, why am I pulling out this book? Like, what is it with this book and me and God? So I had to put the book away. And it's an amazing thing. You know, like, it used to be when I talked about 10, 11, and 12, I'd say, read your big book, prayer, get down on your knees. Third step prayer. It's different. You know, it's different today. I do Oxford group meditation. I do pad and pencil. I do watch. You know, when I think about the 10th step, the 10th step is probably next to the 6th and 7th step, the most important step in my life. Because, I can get with God in the morning, and I could take a review of what I've done at night, but it's those in-between hours that are the problem. And that's where reliance and dependence comes in. It's not about the mechanics for me so much anymore, although I had to learn how to do them in order to get in touch with God. I had to clear that channel. And now that the channel has... I look at it as plaque, you know? I really do look at the steps as being like a one huge spiritual angioplasty. It really is. You know, the channels, my channels, my chakras, whatever you want to call them, my arteries to God, were blocked by plaque. You know, that's what it's called, you know? It's not cholesterol, it's called plaque. I take biology. So, the point is that those channels were blocked, and they were blocked by fear, resentment, self-will, selfishness, dishonesty, those things. The steps cleared those away. 1 through 9 began to clear that stuff away, you know, and really learning how to be disciplined with 10 and 11 was really important to me. And where I'm at today is a much more flexible place. And it's kind of uncomfortable to talk about in a meeting because I wouldn't want anybody to think that it's not good to do prayer and meditation because I do it, but it's different today. There are some days when I just sit quiet and I breathe. And there are some days when I pull out my big book and I write. And there are some days when I sit quiet, breathe, pull out my big book and write, and then do yoga. You know? It's evolved because, you know, Bill said that a failure to deepen and enlarge your spiritual life will bring you back to a drink. And that's been my experience. And I began to depend upon God to bring me the information that God, the power greater than myself, was willing to bring, wanted me to have. You know, I used to look to people to tell me what to believe, where to look, where to go. Read my big book for me, please. Chew it up and tell me what to do, because I don't want responsibility for my own recovery. And I've grown to a place with 10, 11, and 12 where I've become, between me and the power, my highest power, which lives within inside of me, which is what I believe, and we've already discussed that it's my opinion, and I can say it if I want to, believe it if you want. My highest power, which dwells within me, but I'm just clarifying that. So this highest power that lives within me guides and directs me, and I see things today, and things are attracted to me, and I'm attracted to them in order to deepen my experience. And when I learn anything, I bring it within, and I ask God whether or not this is what I need to know, to use it. You know, I evaluate, use, or discard. And for me, it used to be that if somebody said it to me, it was law. What you believed about me was who I was. You know, and somewhere between 1 and 12, that dropped away. And it became someplace, there was this secret, safe place between me and God. And the steps helped to build that. And I have that within today. I do have that sanctuary that I never had before. That safe place within me where I know, like, it's like whatever happens, even however, my emotions do not dictate who I am. They don't even dictate my spiritual life. I can have 1,000 emotions and 1,000 thoughts and still have that little place within me that is clean and that is safe. And I can experience that today, and I experience that through 10, 11, and 12, through conscious contact with my higher power. You know, I had said that some of the greatest things I had ever learned about the steps and the program and God were through carrying the message to other alcoholics. That it's like when I'm sitting at home and I'm trying to figure out what the heck is in my big book and what it really means, I usually don't get anything because it's an intellectual exercise. And when I'm sitting with a sponsee and we pray and we read the book together, these amazing insights come to me. I'm sure, you know, you guys figured them out before me, but I'm slow. You know, so I'll be like, wow, that's what Bill was talking about. Oh, my God. You know, so all of these things, like, all of the steps are interdependent. Like, I couldn't sponsor if I wasn't directly connected to God. If I didn't have if I wasn't connected at the channels between me and God or within me and were not cleared, there is no way that I can carry the message today because I'd be carrying Carrie's message and that wouldn't help anybody. You know, I couldn't work with sponsees. I don't have wisdom. I mean, I don't have great knowledge. I'm 26 years old. I mean, I sponsor women who are like 50, and they come to me, and I'm like, all right. And then I sit quiet for a couple minutes. I'm like, all right, God, what's going on here? What do we need to know? You know, so the fact is that these women aren't coming to me from my wealth of knowledge and my limited time on this earth. They're coming to me because through the steps, the channels within me have been unblocked or less blocked, I'd like to think of it, because let's get real here, less blocked, and so I can be a vessel for them. And that to me is what the 12th step is really about. And it's hard to articulate and it's hard to put it all together. You know, what worked best for 6 and 7 and all everything else is just to share some experiences and insights that I've gotten. And I think that's the best way I'm going to go about this because I can't wrap my mind around it and there's no way I can articulate it. I could just tell you that I'm not who I used to be. And I didn't believe in God. I hated God. I was at war with God. I wasn't an agnostic. And I wasn't an atheist. I was pissed off. You know, I held God responsible for every bad thing that ever happened to me. It never occurred to me that I had free will. See, you know, that whole free will thing. Damn! So, when I began to develop this relationship with God and these things began to happen to me, it was surprising for me. And I had to throw away what I believed God was. You know, when I walked into the rooms, I looked at God as a big old parent, you know, but let's face it, you know, I'm a parent. If my kids believe that my parent, you know, that God is like me, they're in trouble. You know, parents are human and limited, and I wanted to reduce God to a human and limited conception because I needed to be able to understand God, and that's a futile kind of thing. And so I couldn't get a relationship with God reducing God to being human. You understand? Putting human attributes on what God was. It was very difficult for me because, you know, I couldn't believe in a God that was petty. You know, the God that I believed in when I came into AA wasn't a God I wanted to have. It wasn't a God that I was going to be willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of. You know, that God was demented because I was demented, you know, and I believed on some level that God was like me. You know, I was suspicious of him. When I went through the steps, and at each one of the steps, if you notice, there's a bunch of promises, or I like to call them results. You know, and after the second step, it says that, you know, God will draw closer to you, you know, and that all you need to do is be, you know, be willing, you know, and that God will disclose himself to you. And at the third step, it says that, you know, that you'll be reborn. You know, that the things that have been bugging you will begin to slip away, you know, and that you'll be less selfish and you'll realize that, you're, you know, you're not being such a schmuck anymore, you know. And in the fifth step, there's a ton of promises, you know, and it says that the feeling of feeling that the drink problem, you know, the drink problem or the obsession will begin to be removed. And then, you know, the ninth step has a bunch of ton of promises and everybody knows them. And the tenth step's got the best promises of all. You know, it says that I'll cease fighting everything or anyone. It says that I'll be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You know, and I experienced God in increments. My spiritual awakening and my dependence upon God came in increments. It came with each one of those steps. And it wasn't necessarily the first time I went through those steps that I experienced those things, because as you guys know, in the past couple of weeks, I've explained that I'm dense. And I'll go through the steps and learn the mechanics and not learn the real meaning of the whole thing. You know, I missed that. So, when I, each time I hit one of those things and I internalized what this step was really about or began to internalize what this step really meant, I would experience those promises and I would get like this shot of God. You know, and when the book talks about the educational variety of spiritual experience, that's what they're talking about. You know, everybody thinks it's like, yeah, I screw up a lot and then I learn from it. It's like, no. I think what they're talking about is getting God in increments. They're going through the steps. That it's through learning and experiencing God that you begin to depend upon it. And that's how it worked for me. You know, it was about experiencing God, experiencing a spiritual awakening. I couldn't intellectualize it. I had to be there for it. And that brings me to my favorite topic when it comes to 10, 11, and 12, which is being present in the moment. You know, again, you know, being connected to God is something that you can only truly experience. It's not something that you can explain. It's not something you can force. And I tried many times to contort the steps in order to force, you know, that feeling or that experience, and that's not something that you can do. I remember thinking like, you know, I want to have a spiritual awakening. How do I know if I had a spiritual awakening? How do I know if my spirit's awake? I remember going to people like, I don't know, did I have one? I think I asked Mike once. You know, and everybody was just kind of like, you know, Kara, it's not something that you could just have. It's just something you know. And I was like, what does that mean? That's a riddle. You know, that's one of those Tibetan things. I don't get that. You know? And that's been my experience, that it happens. You know, I can say without a doubt that my spirit has been awakened. And that was something I couldn't say 5 years ago. That wasn't something I could say three years ago. I always had that doubt, like, what if it's not? Because I didn't really trust my experience. And that was something that, you know, I talked about last week, about trusting my experience, and that, you know, actually, it wasn't last week. I was sharing a meeting. Sorry. I love that. I love that when I say something really profound and no one hears it. Not kidding. I was sharing in a meeting, and that's what it was. I was sharing in a meeting on Monday, and I was talking about the 12th step, and I was saying that I had a hard time sponsoring for a long time because I was looking for a formula, and I was trying to impart a formula, and I didn't share my experience. I shared what I thought because I didn't trust my experience. I hadn't matured spiritually enough to do that. And that's something that that reliance and dependence upon a higher power over an extended period of time has given me, is faith and trust in my experience and who I am. You know, when we talk about alcoholism, we know that alcoholics are dishonest. And the person that we're most dishonest with is ourselves. You know, and in the doctor's opinion, it says that we can't differentiate the true from the false. And for a long time, I lived under the suspicion that I still was like that. And I've come to realize that there's something within me, and that's called God, that helps me to differentiate the true from the false. I can sit with something, and I'll take it into meditation, and I'll sit quietly with it and be like, how accurate is that really? And be honest, I get an answer. And I used to answer myself, and it was never good. And now there's somebody else answering me, which is always nice within me. And if you guys put me away, I'll kill you. But seriously, there is something within me that can answer that. And sometimes it comes when I put pen to paper. And sometimes it comes when I sit quietly. I mean, have any of you guys ever just talked to somebody about a problem and you answered your own question? That's called God. That's God within speaking. And when I, early on in recovery, it used to be that I had to do that all the time because I couldn't get quiet enough within to hear it. And over time, it had to be that I had to put pen to paper because that was the only way I could get quiet enough to hear it. And now, I can sit quietly and breathe, and I can get quiet enough to hear it. You know, so prayer and meditation, you know, is... It's about stages, and it's about growth, and it's personal. And I used to look at everybody else and be like, they have a better relationship with God than I do. They're more spiritual, and their spirit is more awakened, like if that's possible. I mean, just think about that for a minute. I had a percentage, an equation. I was like, let me break this down to some sort of spiritual math. You know, and I'd be like, you know, they're more spiritually awake than me, you know. They have something. I got to figure that out. And the thing is that it's not about that anymore. You know, it's such a personal thing for each one of us. And if you take my experience and you create a law about it, then you'll be doing yourself a disservice. The only thing that we can do as human beings is define what we truly believe. You know, my four-step was all about me internalizing what you believed and creating a whole doctrine about that, you know, and in living in 10, 11, and 12 is about finding out what I really believe and trusting that and realizing that there's a place in me that is not broken or defective. I believe that it was the biggest fear of my life, that I was defective, broken, and therefore useless. And in living in and reliance and dependence upon a higher power, I found that that was not true. That Carrie, the real Carrie, not the mom, not the wife, not the daughter, the sister, whatever, but the Carrie that lives within, the true Carrie, that has no face, no real name, is not broken. You know, and I began to learn that I'm not who I think I am. I'm not my body. I'm not my mind. I'm not any of the other conditions that I placed on myself. That there is something within me that is totally pure and that is full of grace. And that is who I am. and I met her, or it, because it's not really a her. And when I met that place, when I met that thing within me, when I met that person, I began to realize that all of my actions and everything that I've ever done in my life doesn't make me who I am. Because I really believe that. I believe that my actions made me who I was. And that there's a place that exists beyond the material realm, and that is tangible. And I don't have to do anything to get there but to sit and breathe. That to me is what the 10th and 11th step is all about. Because I can't watch and I can't step back. I can't be divorced from my selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, or fear for 5 minutes if I don't find that place. Because that's where grace comes from. Because, you know, I'm a big proponent of the fact that I'm powerless over my resentments and my fears and my selfishness, my dishonesty, my self-centeredness. I'm powerless over those things. Lack of power is my dilemma. The fact is I was looking for power in the wrong darn places. And I never, never once thought that I was worthy enough to find it within. And I have. So, once I touched that place and that power, to be able to go through my day without getting so, without catching all my gears, I can do that today. I mean, it's amazing. I'll do my nightly review and I'll step back and I'll be like, so, you know, what do we got? And yeah, you know, I'm a schmuck a lot. But the point is that I don't carry people with me anymore. It used to be that I would carry everybody I came in contact with through the day. The girl who cut me in line, the one who gave me a dirty look, oh, that one, this one, this one, that one. Everybody in the world I carried you with me. And I don't have that weight anymore. And it's through being aware and being present in the moment. The truth is that right now is the only thing that really exists. You know, when I talked about making amends, I said that, you know, I said that it's about going back and setting things right, not necessarily for that person, but so that I can let go of that so I can be more present where I'm at. You know, because the fact is that when you go back and make amends, yeah, you're saying you're sorry and you're going to set it right, but you can't really take it back. Because that's pretty much impossible. Because it doesn't exist anymore. It's already faded off into infinity. The only thing that I have is where I'm at right now. And if I don't carry those people from my past with me, I'm a lot more present. And there's a lot more of me here. So, I said that, you know, I talked about 11 before I talked about 10, because the fact is that, yeah, I have to check in with God, and I have to ask for God's will for me. And I can't do that, or I can't be present in the moment if I don't do that, and I can't do that if I'm not present in the moment. They both really work together, you know. And when I'm talking about 10, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about watching, listening, and being present. And a lot of times I just have to chant all day long, like, that's not now. That's later. That doesn't exist. And I have to say this to myself. Like, I have an internal dialogue between, you know, my higher self and me. And a lot of times it's like, all right, that's not happening. That's not existing. You need to get present. Take a breath. Where are you? Where are your feet? Okay. And I can walk. You know, and this is something that I have to think. Well, you know, and it's gotten to a place where I don't have to do that all the time. It used to be I would literally have to go through all day. All right, stop thinking about tomorrow. It's not happening. Be present. You know, where are your feet? Breathe. You know, God in, fear out. I mean, that was something that I had to discipline myself, and it's something I had to do all the time. And now it's become very natural to me. And that's why where I'm standing up here, I'm at a loss for words for talking about 10, because I'm doing it. It's here. You know, and it's hard to describe. It's something that you have to develop. And again, it's about just being present. It's about not bringing the external things everywhere you go. You know, and in that, you know, I found that They've been very effective in carrying the message because of that. Coming up here is difficult, you know, and speaking in general is difficult. It's never my favorite thing to do, although my ego loves it. And then it hates it because then I spend my time out afterwards saying, oh, I should have said that, should have said this, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll be like, that was then, this is now, you know. But the point is that there's something attractive about somebody who has inner quiet. And I found that when I used to beat my book, and I would talk the steps, and I'd be like, gotta do this or you're gonna die. You know, yeah, I got sponsees, and I worked with women. And I'm much more attractive to other women in sponsorship today. In sponsorship today. Because you heard that. You guys turned it into whatever you wanted. That's not mine, that's yours. The point is I'm much more... Kathy taught me. I'm much more attracted to women today in sponsorship spiritually because I don't have to beat my book. You know, very early on in recovery, I was taught that I should be the best version of the big book I could be. You know, and I thought that meant carrying that book everywhere I went, you know, physically. And to me today, it's about being the best version of the big book today for me is about being present in the moment, carrying love and God with me everywhere I go. Because they're never truly divorced from me, I just fail to recognize the fact that they're there. And if I can bring that wherever I go, then I'm carrying a message of hope to anybody. You know, something amazing happened to me last semester in school. I have a professor who was a drug and alcohol counselor. And I don't know what it was. He was an English professor, so he must have gotten a couple of my essays, and he must have picked up on some lingo. Apparently that AA lingo goes everywhere. You know, we have our own language, you know. And he asked me to help another student. Now, this man never heard me talk about the steps. He had no idea what kind of life I led. But because of who I am and what I carried into that classroom, he knew that I could help somebody. That's what I'm talking about. That's the 12-step work that's real. You know, because I can teach you the big book, and you can learn the lingo, and you can learn how to write inventory. You can learn all that stuff. But when I teach you how to live, when I show you what the big book in action looks like, what the steps in action look like, I'm teaching you something invaluable. I used to say to people all the time, I'd be like, you know, what does it look like? What does a spiritual experience look like? What does living spiritually look like? And someone told me to read the big book, and I'm like, what do you mean? It doesn't say anything about that in there. And then I realized that, you know, Bill said something about a vision of God's will for us. And I'm like, well, all right, he said that in 10 steps, so he's implying that there's some sort of vision going on in that book. Where is it? I just hear, you know, do this, do that, you know. And I realized that throughout the book, Bill gave us an idea of what living spiritually looks like. You know, he tells us about, you know, a calmness, a centeredness with God, the fact that God has become an integral part of your life. Reliance and dependence. He talks about not criticizing, not judging, about being of help to other people, fitting yourself to be of maximum service to God and your fellows, carrying this vision, which is what I just said, into your daily life. That's what living a spiritual life looks like. You know, I used to be attracted to people who had that I still am, because I didn't know how to get that. Like, I knew how to talk it, but I didn't know how to be it. And somewhere in just repetitively going through this steps, because I'm dense, I learned it. You know, it's like, you know, maybe the fifth trip around or something, you know, maybe the ninth, fourth step, something like that, something clicked. You know, I've shared about that. I've told you about all the awakenings that I've gotten, and they didn't come until after my fifth year of sobriety. You know, before then I was just learning how to walk and breathe, man. I mean, just put one foot in front of the other and show up. That's like what I could do. And something happened, like this switch got flipped within me. And, you know, there are people in this room, you know, and they know who they are who helped me get there. And it's an amazing thing. You know, and I didn't learn, I should say, I didn't internalize all that I learned until I stood on my own 2 feet. You know, and I became independent. And, you know, AA talks about, you know, or Fellowship AA talks about, you know, that we can't think for ourselves and our mind's a bad place to go and, you know, don't think, don't drink, go to meetings. And that's not my experience. Yeah, in the beginning, yeah, don't think, don't drink, go to meetings. Maybe the first 5 years, don't think, don't drink, go to meetings. But once the spiritual awakening happens within you, and once you begin to live in the world of the Spirit, that's no longer the case for me. And to be honest, thinking was the thing I was most scared of because it was the thing that got me in the most trouble, you know? But there's something that, there's this amazing thing that I have, and it's like this internal guidance system that says, all right, that's a crock. That's full of, you know, you know you're just lying to yourself there. You better go talk to your sponsor, you know? And I have that thing today that tells me that, you know? And that's my higher power. You know, my higher power lives in you and it lives in me. Lives in everything and every part of this world. There's nothing that I believe that God is not a part of, including nothingness. Because in my opinion, nothing is full of something. It's called God. So when I talk about God, that's what I'm talking about. You know, so it's not like, and I want to clarify that it's not like I believe I'm my higher power. I just think that there's something within me that is a part of God and something within you. So if you want to be clear about it, I think you're my higher power. Not in the way I used to. You know, in a whole new way. Sponsorship. Sponsorship has been one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given. I can't believe these women ask me what I think. Of course, they're not asking me. They're asking the God within. But the point is that I never had friends growing up. You know, I had friends. You know, but, like, they would run away after a short period of time because I didn't work and play well with others. I mean, like, seriously, like, I had, you know, like, I would keep a friend for, like, a couple weeks, a couple months. I had a couple friends for a couple years, but they were really demented like me, you know. So, like, it was, like, apparently two sociopaths can get along. So it was amazing to me that I can sustain a relationship with women or a woman for an extended period of time, and I've been graced with being able to sponsor women for years. And that's something that, I mean, I couldn't keep a friend for weeks, let alone sponsor for years. I don't have a distinction in sponsorship that there's no line that I have between me and the women I sponsor. I used to need to keep that because I was afraid that I wasn't good enough. And so, like, somewhere along in the spiritual awakening, I don't need to keep them at arm's length anymore, and they know as much about me as I know about them. That was something amazing that I learned. You know, people will share more if they know that you're screwed up too. You know, which is a, you know, and it's a trick, I'm telling you. I get them sitting at my kitchen table, and I start knowing all these horrible things that I did. Before I know, they're telling me everything they didn't want to tell me in the first place. And again, my detachment from my own character defects and my faults and the things that happened in my past, my detachment, I should say, came in steps 5 through 10. You know, and today I can talk to just about anybody about just about anything that I've done. And there's no shame or guilt involved in that because I recognize that it no longer exists. Catching that? That happens in step 10. The fact that I was able to maintain a relationship with you know, any one woman was an amazing thing to me. And the fact that I've been able to sponsor women for years is a damn miracle. You know, but there's also, I hit a bottom with sponsorship. You know, and I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I have yet to come up here and, you know, pretend to be good or well. That's why I'm so entertaining. I hit a bottom. You know, I was sponsoring a lot of women. A lot of women. And I had to let them go. A lot of them. And it was a really, really difficult thing because I became attached to a role that I had called sponsor. and it inhibited me from being effective as a sponsor because I was too attached to being one. You know, and because of that, I was no longer effective. And so I asked God for the grace to deal with the situation, and what happened is in a 6-month period of time, well, I have 6 sponsees, a lot, between 9 and 15 women fired me. My ego didn't like that. Oh, it didn't like that. I'm like, oh great, now I suck. I suck as a sponsor. And I was like, yeah, I did. You know, I took on way too much, you know, and I couldn't say no. I couldn't admit my limitations, and I was not effective. Because sponsorship can be addictive. Spiritual awakenings and spiritual life can be addictive. I'm an addict, okay? I'm an alcoholic, and if it makes me feel good, I'm going to do it 1,000 times. You know, I'm like that rat that keeps hitting that lever to stimulate the brain until I don't eat and then I die. That's me, you know? So you give me sponsorship that gives me this beautiful love feeling and this light, and I'm helping people and I'm being unselfish for 5 minutes, you know, and I'm going to keep doing it, you know, and keep doing it and keep doing it and get addicted to it and screw it up and mess it up and do what I usually do with anything that I'm attached to, which is screw it up, you know. And that's exactly what I did with sponsorship until I hit that bottom and I realized what sponsorship was really about. And for a long time, sponsorship was still about me. It was about me not drinking, you know, and I'm going to get crucified for this, but sponsorship today isn't about me not drinking. It's about carrying the love of God out to the world. You know, a lot of what I do today is to prime me to be a vessel for God. You know, it's an amazing thing. It's like I wake up in the morning and I pray because I'm being primed to be a vessel for God. I don't give the finger on the parkway so that I can be primed to be a vessel for God. And if I do, I'm still a vessel for God. I just gave the finger on the parkway. But the point is, yeah, the point is that a lot of what I do each day is about me being prepared and being ready so that I could be of service. You know, in the third step, I made this agreement with God that He was going to be my director. He was going to be my principal. I was going to be His child and His agent. And so, since I made that agreement with God, I made a binding contract. I go about my life trying to be that. And I try to not let trying to be that get in the way of being that. And for those of you who have experienced that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, some of the most wonderful things that have happened to me when I was working with another woman. The first time I didn't feel alone in my life or useless in my life, other than when I was taking care of my children, was when I was sitting across the table with another woman. And I realized that I was not unique in the least. You know, we alcoholics, I still suffer from terminal uniqueness. And a lot of 12 steps didn't really kill that until I began to sponsor. And I heard, you know, we all give our best faces to one another most of the time, except for me when I get up here, because that's not my job. My job carrying the message isn't to give my best face, but to be human. Because the best face will kill people. It almost killed me. So, you know, we all, as human beings, we put up this, like, I'm a nice little person. You're not going to hear my internal dialogue. And I spent my whole life judging myself by, you know, judging my insides by everybody's outsides. And in sponsorship, I began to experience the internal dialogue. This wasn't unique in me, that it was something that all of us experience, you know, and it was a humbling, very humbling, because I believed I was unique, and a very beautiful experience. And it was a time that I began to truly feel a part of the world. You know, I felt disconnected from everybody and everything my entire life, and most of the time it was things that I put up between you and me. And when I'm trying to be an agent of God, when I'm trying to carry the message of the 12 steps to anybody, there's no longer something between you and me. Those things, those automatic defenses that I put up are gone. And the amazing thing is that I can come with those defenses gone, and somebody can have those defenses up, and within 10 minutes they start to erode away. It's an amazing thing to watch. Just watch somebody come out of their shell. I mean, I can remember experiencing it in a fifth step and just crying, and the woman had no idea why I was crying, and I just said, I just saw you. I just saw you. I've known you for a year, and I just saw you. And to be able to do that and see that has been one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given. You know, for a while, though, sponsorship felt like a burden because I made it be that. You know, but there comes a wisdom with sponsorship called knowing when to hold them and knowing when to fold them, and knowing when you need to recharge your batteries. I never wanted to admit that I needed to recharge my batteries or that I didn't have it all the time. I felt like as a sponsor I needed to do that because the women who sponsored me were depending upon me. And today, you know, if I'm not there, I'll say, you know what, I'm not there. Call this person because she's probably more there. I'll pray and then you call me back. Or I pray with them and I tell them what's going on. You know, it's an amazing thing for me today. And it's about being in the world of the Spirit. It's called the fellowship of the Spirit. And when the women that I sponsor and the fact that my sponsor treats me the same way, that we're equals, we're working together in order to fulfill the primary purpose, which is to stay sober and help others, to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the greatest message of Alcoholics Anonymous is that God loves you and that you are not separate from anyone else. I am not separate from anyone else. And we are all part of one huge community of the brotherhood of man and woman. And that all those things that we think that separates us from one another, socioeconomic differences, racial differences, gender differences, are all attachments that need to drop away. Because if you take somebody out of Park Avenue and you take me out of Harrison, you know, and you stand us next to one another and you strip us of all the things that indicate the attachments that we have, we are just people. And that's one of the greatest things to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was never just a person. I was either a piece of crap or I was, you know, master of the universe. You know, and experiencing my humanity has been one of the greatest things. You know, for me today, I'm not a human being trying to have a spiritual experience. I am a spiritual being having a human experience. That means experiencing all the things that make me human, all the petty, uncomfortable, and ugly things that make us human. And carrying the message, living in reliance and dependence upon God, working the steps, these are all things that help me to be that. You know, and there's so much more that I could say, but it would be futile. It would be futile for me to do that because it would be paying a disservice. You know, all I can say, and I hope that I've imparted this to you, that any one of us could have a spiritual awakening, and each one of us is awake. You are all awake. Your spirit is awake. You are asleep. My spirit was having experiences that I had no idea were happening, and then I woke up one day and I said, oh my God, you've been here all along? You know, and that's the truth. And they happen, and they're all personal, they're all significant, and they're amazing. And each one of us has a beautiful story to tell. And our job as members of Alcoholics Anonymous is to do so. And we're supposed to tell you know, our pearls along with our turds. That's all what this is about. You know, and it's what I try to do. You know, and I hope that, you know, that my couple weeks here have shown you a human, fallible, but a beautiful, hey, Ron, a beautiful, you know, a beautiful journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'll leave you with this. I was walking through the parking lot one day, and I was thinking to myself, this was a couple years ago, you know, these people in this parking lot have no idea how spiritual I really am. They have no idea that I do 30 minutes of meditation every day. They have no idea that I admit every wrong that I've ever done. They have no idea. And then I realized that they don't have to do all that stuff because they're perfectly fine. I'm the one who screwed up. You know, that these people don't need to live and do all that stuff and do, you know, 30 minutes of prayer and meditation in order not to kill people. I do, because that's kind of part and parcel of being an alcoholic, you know. And so what I'm talking about, or what I hope I've talked about, is not about how great I am, because I do the steps a whole lot, but more about just, you know, I do the steps so that I can get to the starting gate, so that I can live my life. And I try to bring the big book, the steps, and God into my life, because that's where they belong. They don't belong in here, and they don't belong up here. They belong in my life and my actions. And I hope that each one of you guys experience that. And I know you do, because you're sitting here. And that's what's so awesome about it. And I just really want to thank you for letting me share. And I'm sorry I'm a little scattered tonight. I did an amends, and I'm on a way spiritual high, but I'm like all scattered about it. It was a really awesome thing. He left, so I can say it now. So it was a really awesome thing, you know. And so I came up here, you know, like totally scattered, had no idea what I was going to talk about, and just totally overwhelmed with the feeling of love of God and having no way of getting that out my mouth. And if I didn't say it, I hope I showed it. Thank you for letting me share it.
With this group, we usually have a tradition of just giving a card that we've all managed to sign to remember us by. And I guess the card that we've given it is the fact that I know you are an incredibly voracious reader and have an immense amount of knowledge, both about the program and about a whole lot of other things. Yeah, serial killers and stuff. But I'm really glad that you were able to take that knowledge and bring it to us in a way that's very personal to you, and that we got to really know you. Thank you so much.